Where do things stand in the presidential race, especially in those next states, Nevada and South Carolina? Where do things stand in North Carolina as we start heading into the primary? For more on that, we're joined by Tom Jensen, who heads up public policy polling based out of Raleigh, publicpolicypolling.com, their website, and you can find more numbers on Twitter at PPPpolls. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So last night, a lot of activity, of course, on the debate stage. What do you think came out of it or might come out of it in terms of moving the numbers?
Well, one of the most important things to note about the debate is that a ton of people watched it. The viewership for the debates had been falling. As they sort of had more and more of them. But then yesterday, the trend was totally reversed. It looks like about 20 million people watched the debate last night. I think that's a record for the number of people watching a Democratic debate. So it does have real potential to have an impact on the race. And I think the two candidates who maybe had the most noteworthy nights were probably Michael Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren. Michael Bloomberg's had nothing but momentum over the last few months as he's just spent millions and millions of dollars on his campaign in the early states and has seen his poll numbers go up. But I think generally his debate performance last night was seen as being quite poor. And again, 20 million people saw that. So we'll see if that starts to have an impact on his poll numbers or if he can just spend a few hundred million more dollars and that'll make up for whatever damage that the debate might have done. And then on the more positive side of the coin for the debate, Elizabeth Warren seems to have generally been regarded as having had the strongest performance of the night. Her campaign was increasingly running on life support. She wasn't raising as much money as she needed to. She was well back in the polls in most of the states that are going to vote here in the next few weeks. But again, she had a strong performance with a lot of people watching. So we'll see if she can possibly get any momentum out of that and get back into the top tier of candidates that she was in the fall, but really had fallen out of over the course of the winter.
Now, a couple of recent surveys, and these are national surveys, came out showing Bernie Sanders kind of building a bit of a national lead. And that was certainly true, I think, in Nevada. Now that we're starting to get some numbers ahead of the caucus there, looks like Bernie Sanders, at least heading into last night's debate, was building a pretty decent lead in Nevada. How do you see the Nevada caucus going? And then, of course, you've got the South Carolina primary right after that, which was, and I think still is, considered kind of a must-win state for Joe Biden. How do you see that going?
Well, Nevada definitely seems likely to be a Bernie Sanders win, and I think the question is just how big the margin is. Last night's debate probably won't make a big difference in terms of how things play out in Nevada, because something that was interesting this year is that they offered early voting for the caucus for the first time, and about 70,000 people participated in early voting. And to put that in perspective, only about 85,000 people caucused at all in 2016. So just from early vote, you have turnout almost on par with what happened in 2016. We have no historical precedent to know how many people there are left to caucus on caucus day itself. But it seems likely that, A, there's going to be a record turnout, but also, B, that a large percentage of the vote that is going to be cast was already in the bank before the debate last night. So it's sort of ironic that the Nevada debate may not actually end up having that much of an impact in Nevada. So I do expect Bernie Sanders to win Nevada, probably by double digits. But the big interesting things to watch will be how close it is and who comes in second, third, fourth, fifth, because that's completely incoherent in the polls. A lot of closeness between Biden, Steyer, who's put a lot of money into Nevada, Warren, et cetera. So I think that's where the uncertainty there is. And also, the Nevada caucus is being done under a very complicated voting system where people are having to rank their top three candidates. They have said that they can't promise results on Saturday. So it'll be interesting to see if things at least go better with that than they did with Iowa. Moving towards South Carolina, as you said, absolutely a must-win state for Joe Biden. I think if he can't win South Carolina, he should just drop out. This is a state where, as recently as last month, he was leading by maybe 25 points in the polls. A couple new polls have come out this week showing a very close race in the state between Sanders and Biden. and also South Carolina, along with Nevada, is a state that Tom Steyer has particularly put a lot of resources into. So he's pretty close to the top of the field there as well, which is kind of interesting because he's not really relevant anywhere other than Nevada and South Carolina, but he's doing pretty decently in those two states. It'll be interesting to see if last night did anything to get Biden's momentum turned back around to the point where he might be able to get a clear victory in South Carolina, because certainly I think he needs to win to have any rationale to stay in, but really to feel like he has any chance of winning the nomination, that's a state that he needs to win by double digits, not just a 28-25 kind of win isn't really going to cut it in terms of showing that he still has a viable path to the nomination.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, publicpolicypolling.com, the website, and find him on Twitter at PPPpolls. So talking about Nevada and South Carolina, because those are the next two states in the primary cycle, what about the overall national race? Where do things stand?
Well, definitely Sanders has taken the national lead now, and we're seeing it pretty close for second place for that, too, between Biden, Bloomberg, Warren, and Buttigieg in some polls. Several polls have come out now showing Bloomberg leading states that are going to vote on Super Tuesday. There's been, in the last week, an Arkansas poll that shows Bloomberg winning there, an Oklahoma poll that shows Bloomberg winning there, and that's simply because he's put in the resources there and nobody else has. Nobody else has the money to be, really doing a lot of advertising in all the states that vote on Super Tuesday. So some of the smaller ones, especially, Bloomberg's starting to get the lead. But California, obviously the biggest prize on Super Tuesday. Several polls have come out this week showing Bernie Sanders with the lead there by varying margins. And then another interesting one on Super Tuesday is Texas. The polls show things there close between Sanders and Biden. We actually did a poll over the weekend that I thought was really interesting in Harris County, Texas, which is like the third or fourth biggest county in the entire country where Houston is. And what's interesting about Harris County is the electorate there's about a third white, a third black, and a third Latino within the Democratic primary electorate. We actually found Bernie Sanders winning there with 23%, 22% for Michael Bloomberg, 15% for Joe Biden. I think a couple things that speaks to. One, there's been this thought that Bernie Sanders can't do very well in places that aren't that racially diverse, but that Harris County, third black, third Latino, is about as racially diverse as you could get, and you still see Sanders doing quite well there, so he may be expanding his coalition a little bit. And also for Biden to be in third place and down at 15% in a place that's as racially diverse as that with such a large African-American electorate when Biden is so dependent on African-American voters, I think is another sign that things are not trending well for him. He has to hope that somehow the debate last night gets the ship righted for him, that some of the people who have abandoned him for Bloomberg after seeing Bloomberg in action and not do that well might go right back to Biden where they were before.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, so now let's bring it home to North Carolina as we've got early voting ongoing, primary day coming up in just a couple of weeks. I know we've got some new numbers for the state of the Democratic primary race, but there's also a survey out, I think WRAL, right, put out numbers, head-to-head matchups between the top-tier Democratic candidates and Donald Trump for November. What do all of these numbers suggest about what might happen on Tuesday the 3rd and where North Carolina stands for the general?
Well, the Democratic primary numbers on that WRAL poll are very similar to our most recent poll that we discussed last Thursday, which basically shows a three-way tie between Sanders, Bloomberg, and Biden in the state. They're pretty clearly the top tier of candidates with the most legitimate chance of winning the state, and then everybody else is about 10 points back. So there does seem to be a bit of a consensus that we're kind of in a three-way tie when it comes to the primary. The general election poll, part of that was very interesting. It showed Donald Trump trailing almost all of the Democratic candidates in North Carolina, and some of them trailing by relatively decent amounts, 4 to 6 points in the cases of a few of them. I personally think the poll was probably a little overly optimistic for Democrats. I think the state's probably closer to being tied for the general election than Democrats having those decent-sized margins. But I think big picture what it speaks to is North Carolina is going to be a swing state. I think that we're going to be one of the seven most competitive states in the country this fall. For some reason, we tend not to get put on that swing state list, and I don't really understand why, because it certainly doesn't have anything to do with how we've actually voted. 2008, we were the second closest state in the country for president. 2012, we were the second closest state in the country for president. 2014, we had the closest U.S. Senate race in the country. 2016, we were one of the closest states in the country for president. We've pretty consistently shown that we're a 50-50 kind of state. I don't know why it's taking the national people so long to pick up on that, but definitely looks like North Carolina is going to be a battleground, not just in the primary, but also in the fall.
And then kind of getting back to a question that we've touched on a little bit, which is the relative electability of each of the Democratic candidates. I was looking at the WRAL numbers, those head-to-head matchups, and kind of seeing the same thing that we've been talking about with polls in the past, that what the margins might be a little bit different between one Democrat and Trump and another, but Trump keeps polling kind of the same percentage, 45-46 in this case, against every Democrat. So it's really more a matter of name recognition than anything else, I think, still, right?
Yeah, and that speaks to the most practical thing I can say today, which is that I have a lot of people in North Carolina contacting me saying they're not sure who they want to vote for in the primary yet and want to know who the most electable is. My answer to that is that they're all electable. With Trump's popularity where it is, any of these Democrats, if they end up getting the nomination, is going to have a decent chance of winning in the fall. I'm not saying they will win in the fall, but they'll have a decent chance of winning in the fall, every single one of them. So I tell people to vote their hearts. That's what I'm going to do personally. I have finally decided who I'm going to vote for. And, I had gone through all sorts of machinations, including coming up with an algorithm to help me decide who to vote for. And finally, in the end, I decided to just vote for who I like. And that's what I encourage everybody else to do as well.
I'm not going to ask who you're voting for. I want to know more about the algorithm. What was the algorithm?
Well, there's one candidate who I really don't like, and there's one candidate who I really do like, and there's one candidate who I'm fine with. And so when I had the algorithm, it was to determine whether I could vote for the person who I really like or whether I needed to vote for the person who I'm fine with to keep the person who I don't like from winning.
Gotcha.
But the dynamics have changed a lot, so I finally just decided to simplify matters and just vote for who I like. The person who I'm going to vote for, I know that in 50 years I'll look back and say I'm proud that I voted for that person for president. And I think that anybody who has somebody who that's the case for, you should vote for them whether you think they're going to win or not. Because at the end of the day, it's hard to vote strategically. This primary is a mess. You can't go wrong just voting for who you really believe in.
PublicPolicyPolling.com, the website. Find them on Twitter at PPPPolls. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.